The question was asked, who is the greatest Jew? So, let's see what Chazal told us. Chazal said in many ways, we have the pasuk, Lo kam navi od b'Yisrael ki Moshe. There was never a greater prophet than Moshe. But if you look closely, the Medrash says, Lo kam, first of all, b'Yisrael al ba'kum ken. And the Medrash also has an argument whether it means only in his dar, that maybe Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov in certain respects were greater. And the Rambam is famous for this, discussing in which ways Moshe was greater than the Avos, in which way the Avos were greater than Moshe. But it's not from the Rambam, it's really a Medrash Mishnat Rabbi Eliezer that discusses, and the Medrash Rabbah quotes from Mishnat Rabbi Eliezer, in which ways Moshe was greater than the Avos. But it definitely seems... Okay. It definitely seems that Moshe Rabbeinu, if he was the greatest prophet, and we say prophecy is the greatness of a human being, meaning as man grows, so it definitely would seem that the top four are the Avos and Moshe Rabbeinu. And it would seem like Moshe is number one. So that's, you have other Gemaros which discuss, could you prepare Leo?
Is there room to argue Rabbi Akiva is in there somewhere?
Oh, so now we have Gemaros. Moshe Rabbeinu says, give the Torah through Rabbi Akiva. We have the Gemaros that compare Ezra to Moshe Rabbeinu. And I want to add just one more point. There's a Gemara in Tanis where Rabbi Broka is standing in the marketplace and he asks Elio, who's going to make it to the world to come? And Elio looks at the marketplace and says, no one. We just have to envision 2 million people. You know, Madison Square Garden times, I don't know how many times. And you're looking at masses and masses of people. And Elio says, gee, I don't see anyone here. No one's making it. Doesn't say how many people were in the marketplace, but a marketplace in the days of Chazal seems like there were 2 million people, right? And then he says, those two fellows, right? Those two. So he runs after them. And those two would be busy making people happy. They were jesters. They jokers. They'd make people happy. They had other good qualities about them. Rav Nissim Gaon wrote a work called Sefer Masiot, and in that book he quotes stories. His father-in-law had tragedies, personal tragedies, and he wrote to his son-in-law, Rav Nissim Gaon, he said, why should I read Christian books? The Christian write all these books with happy endings that encourage you in times of despair. You write me a book so I could study Jewish sources, and that'll encourage me in times of despair. So he writes a book, and he quotes many stories along that vein, where he shows how people who were very, very kind, people who did mitzvos, many different stories about different mitzvos that people did, and the rabbis were told, this person is going to sit next to Rabbi Yoshua, one of Rabbi Akiva's rabbeim. This person is going to sit next to Hillel. Different people of different, they did good deeds. And that brought them to the level where in the world to come, they were going to sit next to giants. Giants of Torah. And I thought, even though Rav Nissim Gaon doesn't spell out what his message is with these stories, the stories are from many texts in Chazal. Some we don't know where they're from. Some must have been on tradition. It seems, you have the story with Rabbi Akiva and Natan de Tzutzita, the story about the guy who had shining light from his head. Rashi quotes part of the story in Tractate Sanhedrin, but none of you guys know what I'm talking about. You guys should know the story. The story in a nutshell, just because it's worth knowing, is that Moshe Yuda? No. I think that kids should help their Ima right now.
That's right.
Oh, it's a good story.
Okay, אני צריך לתחיל בבית ולסגור את הדלת רגע. עכשיו אני צריך ללמד, עוד נעסקים. למה? כי לא כל דבר מתאים לילדים. אני אקרא לכם עוד 5 דקות. אתה יכול לקחת את הצ'ונט, משה יהודה.
תודה רבה.
קח את הצ'ונט.
אבא, אז אפשר לגמור את זה משל אבא, אני אוכל בסוכה אחרי זה.
אחי, זה בסדר. תסגרו את החלון. חלון סגור.
אבא, אמא, אמא.
The story which the Gemara just references it, Rashi quotes a few lines on it, and Rav Nissim Gaon quotes the full story, that there was once a man who had a beautiful wife, and he made his living, and there was a guy who lived in the same town whose name was Natan, and he was very wealthy. And Natan saw this beautiful woman and said, "I desperately want her." And he kept desiring her to the point where he fell ill in bed. And he got so ill that they thought he would die. And the doctors came into Natan and they checked him out and they said, "The only way he'll be cured is if he can be intimate with that woman." So they went to the rabbis and they said, "Natan's willing to pay any amount. Is there any way that he could have this other person's wife?" So the rabbi said, "Tell Natan to drop dead." The doctors checked again, and they said, "Well, at least let him talk to her. That might help him get better." And the rabbi said, "Let Natan drop dead." And then they said, "Could you fill a bowl for Aaron?" And then they came to the rabbis, and they said, "She could stand behind a fence, and Natan will just talk to her, and that might help him get better." And the rabbi said, "Tell Natan to drop dead." And with that, Natan stayed in bed, deathly ill. And that's the source, by the way, for the halacha that's quoted in the Rambam, that afilu ledaberimo machorei agader. We don't permit that. Even. Okay, let's see the continuation of the story. And then this guy, the husband, fell to debt. And every day his wife would come and bring him food to the prison. And he was suffering because he owed a lot of people money. And one day he tells his wife, "Look, Natan was willing to give us any type of money. So why don't you just go and sin with Natan? And then we'll be out of this trouble. Here I am sitting in prison." And she looks at him and says, "How dare you? How could you suggest such a thing? It's biblically prohibited. What's wrong with you? How could you tell me to do such a thing? You're crazy. No way." And she didn't show up the next 2 days. So he gets no food in prison. After 2 days, he's crawling on his feet, shaking with hunger. And she comes and she brings him food. And he says, "You see, you hate me. You could keep me alive. And I'm dying. And you could save my life. All I asked you to do was go to Natan, and then all our problems would be resolved." And she says, "No way." And he says, "Come on. Maybe he'll give us a loan. Maybe something. Go to Natan." So the woman says, "You filthy, I'm going to listen to you, but you should be embarrassed of yourself." And she makes her way over to Natan's house. So she comes to the gate, and the servant standing at the gate sees her, and he says, "I can't believe it." He runs to Natan, and he says, "You remember that woman? You remember you wanted her? Well, she's standing at the gate. She's come to your house." Natan says, "It can't be. But if it's true, you're hereby free. You're free to go. You're no longer my servant. I'm freeing you now." And then she comes to the house and knocks on the door. And the servant runs to Natan and he says, "You know that woman? She's knocking on the door." Natan says, "It can't be. But if it's true, you're also free. And I'm giving you gifts and you can go." And then she walks into the house and Natan sees her. And he looks up from the bed. And there she is. And he can't believe it. And he comes out of bed. And she says, "Natan, my husband's in jail. And you're a wealthy person. And you can give us a loan. Now, I want you to think about the Ribbono Shel'olam right now, and you have your one opportunity in all of life where you could destroy everything that's of value in your life in the next minutes, or you can become a tremendous tzaddik in the coming minutes, and I want you to make the right decision, Natan. I want you to stop and take control of yourself and think that there is a creator and there is a right thing to do now and a wrong thing to do now." And Natan stands there and he looks at her and he looks down and then he bends over and he sits on the floor and starts weeping. And he's thinking and he's thinking and he's thinking. And finally he says, "Okay, I'm going to do what's right." And he asks her, "How much money do you want?" And he gives her the money. And with that he sends her off. And she comes back to her husband to prison. And she brings the money and she frees her husband. And her husband says, "You filthy wife, how could you be not faithful to me?" And she says, "What do you mean? You brute. You told me to go and I went. And I did nothing wrong. And I brought you the money." And he says, "Liar. You'd never have the money if you didn't sin." And from that day onward, their marriage is on the rocks. She's upset at him. He's upset at her. She got him out of prison. He's angry at her. And the continuation of the story, it says in the Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva was once learning, and he looked out the window, and he told his students, "Don't you see that shining light? Where is it coming from?" So the students said, "We don't see it." And he looked out the window, and he saw a man riding on a horse. And he ran out, and he said, "Who is that man?" And they told him, "That's Natan. No light coming from him." Rabbi Akiva runs up to him, and he says to him, "Natan, you have a shining light. Tell me what happened in your life, and what did you do? You did something. I see a shining light from you." And Natan gets off his horse, and he says to Rabbi Akiva, "Well, this is the story, and this is what I did." And Rabbi Akiva, from that day, gave him the nickname Natan de Tzutzita, Natan who has the spark, Natan who has the light. And he brought him into Beis Medrash and taught him Torah, and he became a big Talmud Chacham. And then, when this man heard that Rabbi Akiva went up and approached this man, Natan, and Rabbi Akiva said it, so then he believed his wife, and they lived happily ever after. And Natan became the famous Natan de Tzutzita. So this whole story, Rashi quotes three lines of the story. The Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon quotes the whole story. I'm just bringing the story because, why is the story quoted? Because we have this concept that Rav Nissim Gaon constantly shows us, that even though Torah is the biggest mitzvah, but a person can make it to the top of the ladder in other ways too. Meaning there are mitzvot, and we have these stories, be it the story of the Gemara and Tanis, or the story of Natan de Tzutzita. You have stories that constantly drive home the point that a person can get very, very high by doing their job in this world. And the Mabit, in the beginning of the Beit Elokim, writes that a person is gauged based upon their potential. He's not gauged based upon the product. Moshe Rabbeinu taught 50 million people, so he's got this much. And I only did kach, so I got that much. No, the Mabit says we're each gauged based upon what we did vis-a-vis our own potential. So that's why the question is a difficult one. But, nonetheless, Rav Chaim Mivolozhin writes that every time you see a name doubled over, you see a break. Avraham, Avraham. Yaakov, Yaakov. And that's because no one reached their potential except for Moshe. Only about Moshe it says Moshe, Moshe. And that's why it would seem that if we had to answer the question, who is the greatest Jew?
Well, Aaron, then, what about Aaron?
Doesn't say it about him.
Names interchangeable in the Torah because...
So even though the Medrash does say that Aaron and Moshe were on the same level, it seems that it means in a certain respect, but not in every respect. That's what it seems like.
I thought that respect is that according to their potential, like Moshe was greater in Nevuah, but according to their level of potential, they both reached the top.
I don't know. So that I don't know.
What does that mean about Shmuel?
Shmuel is
equal to both Moshe and Aaron.
Right. So that's a good question. What did Chazal mean by that? That's
Moshe gam ibet abchira b'chayav.
Lama, why do you think Moshe lost his Bechira Chofshit?
Because some point, זה נגיד בעברית, היה בנקודה בחיים שכבר אדם כזה לא היה שנתן את התורה לישראל, לא יכול לחתות.
אבל אתה רואה שהוא כן חתה. נסיעה משה בנו דיל.
שמון האמורים.
I don't really, when I go outside, I don't really have the option to go ahead and murder everybody.
I don't know. Why?
Well, because I know, because I worked on myself to that level, that it isn't feasible that I would do that this week. Right? So I know that I've lost my Bechira to have the option to take a gun and shoot everybody tomorrow. But I think everybody only has a range. They know where they are, and they're given options within their range.
That's what Rav Dessler writes. I don't...